given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on the Paranormal View.
And welcome everybody right here to the Paranormal View on the ParaX Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight, those listening here in the chat room and those from around the world. We appreciate each and every one. If you are listening in the chat room and you have questions tonight, you can private chat them to either Henry Foister or Ceiling Cat, and we will get those answered for you. If you are listening from somewhere else around the world and you'd like to come over to the chat room, go to para-x.com and click on the chat now button and just sign in, and you'll be with all these wonderful people. You'll be able to interact with them and interact with us and ask questions and everything. And if you don't want to come to the chat room but you have questions, you can go to theparanormalview@gmail.com and send us a question. Just put it headline question and we will get those answered for you. So with that, tonight we got a great show lined up, and with us we have Barbara Duncan.
Hello everybody.
And we got Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
Okay, you guys did hear the music and everything intro?
Yes, actually.
Oh, good then. So Share Sounds works. So you know, we got a lot to really talk about. I mean, it's been raining here. It's been raining everywhere. We're still supposed to get a whole bunch of rain tomorrow. They said we could.
Not raining here, Henry.
Well, it's raining here, and they're talking like flooding here and everything. So as long as it don't get into my basement, I'm okay. So, but yeah, it's cold. It had been running in the 80s and 90s, and then today we woke up and they said, oh, it's only going to be in the mid-60s all day today. I said, oh, crap. And they were right. It's been chilly all day. So with that,
frost will be on the pumpkin soon.
Very soon. That's what I'm afraid of. So, or Barbara, got anything you want to say or add before we get started?
Barbara, anything on your side first?
No, just the usual.
Well, I've got a script being read, publicly table read at WeMakeMovies.org group, which is meets Wednesday night right in Hollywood on near Santa Monica Boulevard and Vine. So go to WeMakeMovies.org and go to the upcoming events and look under writer workshop for this Wednesday night.
Okay. I guess, why don't you just go ahead and introduce our guest, Jeff? I mean, we got a
couple hours.
Lots to talk about, yes.
Well, tonight's returning guest is the always welcome Thomas Wortman. He's a former dean of the American National University, and he's the state director at MUFON and co-director at Cleveland Ufology Project. And having studied business human resources at Kaplan University, Thomas has learned to read people when it comes to interviewing UFO witnesses and abductees. So welcome back, Thomas Wortman. Yay.
Hey. You know, I want to make a change to that, though. There's one change that you don't know about. Actually, as being the co-director of the Cleveland Ufology Project, I did step down from that since our last talk on there. I got to the point that there's so much going on out there right now. And I wanted to start moving into more private research, and I had to clear the slate somehow. And I kind of decided to step back and say, okay, let's let somebody else take over for a while.
Yeah.
So I kind of backed out of that. And then wouldn't you know it, it wasn't more than a couple of days later, all of a sudden everything started popping up. More people started wanting some assistance in certain areas.
Oh.
So there goes all that free time again. But it's going to be interesting.
So you're still kind of working with them, just not as the co-director?
I stepped down as director, and I just told them if I can make the meetings, that's fine. Because what was happening is we were doing monthly meetings, and the group has been around since 1952. Look at that, 1952, continually meeting, oldest meeting group in the world. And I enjoy the people there. I love the people there. But when I was doing a meeting on each month, I was putting together like for a talk, for like 3-hour talk to keep the conversation rolling that night. I was preparing like for 3 days to put all that stuff together, because what I'd do is I'd get the videos, I'd get audio clips, research the things and find evidence behind stuff on the outside, and then put together this whole program. And not necessarily do it all the time, but at least to keep conversation rolling the whole night. And I thought, well, do I keep spending that, 3 days every month just for that 2-hour meeting, or do I take and put those 3 days into something else? So that's why I decided to go for something a little bit different.
Yeah. Now, if you get a chance and you find Thomas going to be speaking somewhere, I advise to go listen to him. Very good. I went to Columbus and got to listen to one of his talks, and ooh, interesting.
Did you get a photo together?
I took some on the phone.
Well, that's kind of what I meant, yeah.
Uh-huh. I'll have to bring my selfie stick along next time.
Exactly, yeah.
but I do have one coming up, though, and here's an interesting one. About what, 5, going on 6 years ago, something like that, the Richland County Astronomical Society contacted me and say, hey, would you come down and talk about UFOs? I'm like, wait a minute, this is an astronomy group and they're inviting me in? I mean, sometimes there's the feeling between the two different groups that, okay, you're looking for UFOs, we're looking at space. And even though a lot of people think that they're looking for something in common, there's kind of a separation between those two fields on there. And I thought, well, what the heck? I'm that type of person. I'm game. I'll go down for it, I went down, did my first talk. And it was actually well received. The people were very receptive of it on there. You had some that said, I don't believe in this stuff, which there's all types out there, but then you have to appreciate that. But I had several people come up afterwards saying, hey, when I was out watching the stars one night, let me tell you what I saw. And they were talking about their own experiences on there, UFO related. And it's been going on 6 years now. I've been doing a talk every year. As a matter of fact, one night we even had, 70 people show up for a talk in an astronomy group. And they've got what they call a star party coming up here shortly. It's going to be coming up in October, somewhere right around October, weekend of October 12th, 13th, somewhere in there. And I'm going to be speaking on a Friday night. And then that whole weekend, they're going to have events, including having the observatory open for anybody who wants to come. They've got a minor fee for that to cover their expenses. But they've got a 37-inch telescope down there, which is one of the biggest amateur telescopes in the country. And they just spend the whole weekend out stargazing. A great group down there. And I'm just appreciative of the fact that they're willing to have me come down there and talk each year. What I'm going to talk about this year, I don't know.
You'd think with the modern digital cameras and what have you, most of the astronomers would be hooking up their digital cameras to their telescopes?
Yeah.
A number of them do. Matter of fact, I was actually hoping to win one because they had a raffle down there. And I'm like, hey, I could use that, yeah. to put on mine. Mm-hmm. But there's even, in this case, Barbara, a kind of like an app you can get for your computer that you can take like your own like Logitech camera, have it aimed out the window at the sky, and if it detects motion, it records it.
Wow.
And they're calling it like a UFO type thing.
UFO detector kind of an app?
Yeah, UFO detector on their type app. And I get the logic behind it. I mean, it's a good idea, but the problem that I've got in my area is the ambient lighting around and then the sensitivity of the equipment.
Like bugs and birds and...
Exactly. We get a lot of aircraft over my house, so that's the big thing right there.
But so essentially it's like the ghost detector app, which just sort of makes blinkies.
Yeah. Yeah, except that if you probably were someplace rural, something like that, very low ambient light, it could be, you know, something very valuable.
Oh, certainly for that. I mean, picking up meteors, for example, at least be.
Right, right. I know the astronomy club said it, a fireball came over, it lit up a whole observatory the one night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, since the last time you was on, you went to a big conference in New Jersey. How did that go?
Well, that was interesting. I debated about going and not going, and then finally said, you know, I need a break, number one, from work. And number two, they asked me to speak at the investigators training over there. And I thought, okay, you know, this will be interesting. I'll do a session. I told them what I would do is I'd do one on computerized software and do training on different programs and software tools you can use to help do investigations. And as I started doing it, Henry, I mean, I was the first one out of the gate. So here we are. The conference officially began like on a Friday. So here we are on Thursday morning at 8:00. I got in bleary eyed. I drove in from Ohio into New Jersey the night before. So at 8:00, I'm up there in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. I know Cherry Hill.
And they said, okay, you're the first one out of the gate at 8:00 in the morning. I'm like, oh boy, what more can they do to me? And I start getting ready to talk. I get up on the stage, and there's about 60-plus investigators in the room, something like that at the time. And I look out in the audience, and who's standing in the back of the room but Travis Walton?
In New Jersey?
In New Jersey.
Sweet.
And for those that don't know who Travis Walton is, he was the one who went through an abduction situation back in the 1970s that they made the movie Fire in the Sky about. Well, there's another one out that was done by somebody else that's much better.
Oh, good.
Jennifer Stein redid one a few years ago. Ooh. And it's a much more accurate portrayal of everything that went on. And I'm back there. I'm up there talking. I'm like, oh, crap. What's he saying? What's he saying? What's he think? You know. And he stayed in the back room the whole time as I did my talk. And we had anywhere from beginning investigators to senior investigators who've been doing this a long time. I'm like, boy, I hope this goes good, because I didn't want to admit that I procrastinated for one of the first times of my life and waited till like 2 days before the conference to put my program together. I hate doing that, but I'm like, okay. And I looked out and I saw our director of investigation talking to our international consultant. I'm like, oh, am I screwing up this bad, you know? But then afterwards, I mean, Travis stayed the whole time. I talked. I did my presentation for like an hour and a half. And then they gave me word afterwards he could let me go for another half hour to an hour if I wanted to.
Oh, if you insist.
Yeah, exactly. And they said that the feedback was fantastic, which made me feel really good. And then I got asked to be invited on some other projects that they've got going for MUFON when they saw what I could do. And what made me really feel good is on that the next night, Travis Walton made a comment on how fantastic he thought the training was for field investigators. And I'm like, that's a relief. Wow, did you see that first guy up on the stage? Whoa. And also, I felt good because her director of investigations made a comment. She goes, that first guy who did that talk was just incredible on what he could do. And it's a real good compliment, because when you're doing investigations, a lot of times, like I may do a lot of stuff, research from my computer to my office. I may go out and do stuff individually out in the field. And you don't necessarily get that feedback from anybody on there. You just do your job and keep moving forward. And when you get the feedback from somebody like that, it just really makes you feel so much better. And that's partly what the conferences do. And when they started going into the conference then, one of the people I wanted to see was Luis Elizondo, who was head of the Pentagon's program that they ran for a number of years. Matter of fact, according to him, they're still running it. he just stepped down and somebody else took over who's now unnamed. But I wanted to hear.
Now, this isn't Project Blue Book.
No, it wasn't Project Blue Book. Project Blue Book was actually one which evolved from like 1947. You had like Project Sign and Project Grudge kind of migrated into Project Blue Book, which ran until right around the 1969 timeframe. And that was the one run by the Air Force. And one of my friends actually has some of the actual files from that that were left in a house by a former investigator for Project Blue Book that we've reviewed. No smoking guns here, by the way. But the project that was done at the Pentagon was one that Harry Reid, who is a senator from Nevada, was pushing the different appropriations committees to get some money allocated for a program to basically look for technologies, advanced technologies. And Luis Elizondo was the head of that program once they got it rolling. And he was the keynote speaker on a Friday night. And I didn't know what to make of the guy because I'd seen him do a couple of interviews on like Fox and a couple networks out there. And I'm like, okay, is this guy for real? Is he, what is he? But he seemed to be very down to earth person on there. He got up and started doing his talk. And basically says, I'll come out and I'll tell you what I can tell you. But he says, you have to appreciate the fact that if something is classified, if something falls in the nature of certain things I can't talk about, I won't. But he says, I'll give you my perspective on what I did while I was there. And that's exactly what he did. He came out and basically he said to begin with, he says he was called into a location and interviewed multiple times by various personnel. And after the interviews, he didn't really know. Oops, there's my dog. Oh.
Maybe he see something.
Yeah, he well, didn't really.
That's not one from my house.
No, that's mine. One of mine. But anyway, she's not happy right now. But anyway, he said he was interviewed. And he didn't really know what was going on. And then after like several interviews, they said, okay, you're obviously the person for this position. And he's like, you know, like what position? Well, a program we're going to be running. And that program is, well, they couldn't really give an idea what the program really was. Because I don't think they had a true vision of what they were going to do with it at that time. Because what they were doing was basically getting videos and all this other materials that they were going to start reviewing. And most everything at that time was internal, the way I understood it, that they were getting things in from different branches of the military, different other avenues on air. And they wanted somebody to head a program to review that material because they were looking at things that they could not explain. So they thought, well, let's get our own organization going. Let's review this and let's see if we can find an answer for what some of these technologies, what these things are that people are reporting and seeing. So he took over that program and then basically said, this is what we're going to do to put it together. And he realized that, you know, being in the government, that he had so many different supportive groups out there he could utilize, that when stuff started coming in, the way of saying sometimes you get a ton of stuff coming in. Other days, you'd just be sitting at your desk almost twiddling your thumbs because nothing was going on. But when stuff would come in, what they would do is they may have to go look for radar data. Well, you've got different branches of the military. You've got the FAA. You've got all these things potentially at your disposal on you could probably connect with. So he just started getting these things in, say, okay, let's send this out to so-and-so and have them give us an opinion what this is. Let's send this to so-and-so, have them give us an opinion what it is. And in the process, though, what they weren't doing is telling everything. They were just saying, look at this, basically, or look at this and say what you think this is. They weren't giving them the whole picture. Really, this was like a UFO program at that point. So let's just kind of hold some things back from them. Because if you start attaching that word UFO to things in the government, it may develop the chuck walls, and next thing you know, your funding could get cut. Well, in this case, the program is called Advanced Threat Technologies. So that really could imply, is this something maybe Chinese, Russian, or some group that we don't know out there? So they ran the program. And when some of the information that your listeners may have seen on the internet via YouTube and different other medias out there, some of the videos where they showed the jets intercepting objects out there, he said basically the reason I can talk about them is they were not classified. He says classified information I will not talk about. But he says those videos were basically vetted. They went through the videos. Any information in the videos regarding like location, times, and stuff was all removed. Things that pilot conversations had going on, including certain information which could potentially identify the, let's say if it was a Navy plane, what ships they were associated with, their locations, any armament they may have had on board, any technologies they may have had on board. Conversations on those lines were being cut away. So he said that's why people were seeing little clips of maybe like 2 minutes long. And they were complaining, we're not seeing the whole thing. Well, they said they had to, certain things were being cut out because of potentially sensitive information on here. But he said these were things that were coming in and that they were looking at out there. Now, he didn't say that these were alien ships by any mean on air, but he just said that this is what the program was doing. And he says that he just got to a point that when he left the organization, he went over to a group now called Two to Stars Academy. When he went to the other organization on there, he basically says, you know, I will not talk about the classified information, but this is not classified. That's why he can talk about it. And to me, he just seemed very down to earth, very open. He complimented MUFON for the job that they've done, along with Peter Davenport of National UFO Reporting Center, for at least going out, like in this case, MUFON, for collecting data, which he says is extremely valuable out there. And even in this case, old data out there. From older cases on there. Because to him, you want to look for, the way I see it, commonalities between different sightings. Let's say, for example, a project I'm working on right now. You look at a certain region, for example, in the country. What type of objects are being reported in that region? What shapes are they? Are there certain times of year these objects may appear more than others? Are there certain times of day they may be more seen? And you start looking for common factors between them on here. And by going through, let's say, our database, I can go back through and I can pull a lot of that stuff up. I was fortunate enough to meet with Cheryl Costa, who just put out a book on data. And I met her at the conference, and she actually spoke on her Henry at Art conference right after that. We had our conference in August here in Ohio, and it gave me a lot of ideas I can use on how to glean data from databases on there. But the challenge is when you get that data, sorting out accurate information, sorting out inaccurate information, and then to me it's really like establishing, in this case, like a margin of error on what you're doing, and that's really a challenge out there. Because you've got so many people doing investigations, so many people putting information in. You have the general public to begin with filling out the reports. You've got the research being done, the investigations along with that. And when you get that many people involved, it's difficult to, I guess you could say, get a consistency across the board on interpretations on things. And that's one of the things that MUFON is working on right now. And that's one of the ideas that we did behind like the training to get more people on the same page on techniques that they're utilizing. But I was actually very impressed with Elizondo on there with his talk. And there
now,
was...
I'm curious, what line do they draw to classified when it comes to UFO sightings? Are they looking at strictly... I mean, sightings, obviously everybody sees them. How could it be classified? But is there what, contact? Is that when it becomes a classified information?
There wasn't a defining line for that, but the interpretation I put on there is it doesn't have to be contact. You could have, in this case, a sighting which is basically unexplained. And I think that's where you get that at. Let's say, for example, that somebody is on a military installation and they see an object at a certain point. They identify that location. They utilize their methods within the military to scrub it and say, okay, was there any aircraft in this area? Was there any of this in this area? And they're doing a similar process to probably what we are behind the scenes. And then when they see that, wait a minute, there was nothing in that area at that time frame, and you have people who are very credible witnesses reporting it, that's when it becomes maybe something that is being classified, also, especially depending on where it's at, if you're around certain bases on there.
So it's not necessarily what's being seen, but where it's being seen.
I think that would be the bigger factor, where it's being seen at. And let's say, for example, are there other sightings in that same region? You could potentially have something, let's say, for example, crossing the U.S., seen at multiple places along a, let's say, a line going across the whole U.S. But if you see that data is pointing at, hey, wait a minute, something was here, something was here, something was here, going all the way across the U.S., and you don't find data saying that, wait a minute, there are aircraft at that time going across the whole area, that may move into that classified region. So wait a minute, we can't explain this, and we don't want the public to know that something was traveling over us that we had no idea what it was.
Okay. I assume... Go ahead, Barbara.
No, I was going to say that makes sense. I was also thinking around military bases, they probably don't want the general public knowing that there's any sort of sightings around that.
Oh, you definitely would around military bases. And like in an area like Area 51 or some place like that, they may actually even play it up sometimes just to develop more of a mystique, even if it wasn't anything.
Misdirection.
Yeah, exactly. Misdirect them on here.
Yep.
I mean, to me, I've thought for years that Area 51 is predominantly military. And if you're going to do something, you have everybody looking at this spot and you're actually doing it someplace else.
Yep. Highly credible. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let them keep looking at Area 51.
Some of the sites that I've been looking on and reading up on some stuff, they said that there seems to be a whole lot more, I guess, sightings or close calls with not just military aircraft, but civilian aircraft with UFOs. There seems to be a lot more of that that's not really publicized.
You know, I've done some research on some reports that came out around a few different ones on there. We had the one back up in Oregon last fall where different commercial flights reported seeing an object up there. There was another one out in the Arizona region where a couple different flights also reported an object, and there were even one of the aircraft is even asked by air traffic control if they saw anything unusual in that region. Now, how you'd feel, Henry, I was that pilot, and they're saying, is there anything unusual about 10,000 feet above you right now?
Now, that's that one that I played.
Look up.
Last time he was on, we played that episode.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is more of that, it seems like, coming out now, whether it's just some more pilots opening up about what they're seeing up there, I don't know. But then also you've got some more unusual things going on, too. You've got Google with their balloons out there now. True. And about, was it a month ago, I think I was researching it, and the balloons were actually out around the area, I think, of the wildfires out west. And they're probably using them for communication with people out there. But they may get some unusual accounts for that. But to me, I would love to sit down and talk to some pilots and hear their stories.
I wonder how hard it is to distinguish something. I mean, if it's a weather balloon or something like that, how many times would they make a mistake and say that it's something else other than a weather balloon?
You know, I don't know. Again, that goes back to a degree of error, because an individual I talked to, I don't know, it was 5 years ago, something like that, was a commercial airline pilot, and everybody can make mistakes. But the mistake he made that night is we were out doing a skywatch, and he was shining a laser pointer at an aircraft. And I said, that is an aircraft. He goes, oh, no, it's not. I said, you want to bet? And I have an app with me right then. It shows me what's in that region.
Yeah, you better run for the hills in, because they're going to be looking for you.
Oh, you got that right. Well, he didn't believe me, but I know exactly what I was looking at. But anybody can make mistakes on there. And you figure that when they're traveling, I mean, even though they may have their planes on autopilot or whatever, there's still a lot of distractions inside the cockpit as they're flying on there. So many instruments they have to watch. And they may not notice something, or it could be one of those things by the time they see it. I mean, you figure that they're traveling 500 miles an hour for a lot of commercial airliners. And what are they, about upper 20-some, 30,000 feet?
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to be going by it potentially very quick, yeah. You know. So they may not get that much of a chance to see anything on there.
I have a question from the chat room. It's from Tabby. And she wanted to know if you had any information about a UFO sighting in Clarksburg, Maryland in June of this year.
I would have to look that one up through a database.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, no. Just because of the fact that, like, MUFON itself, we're receiving hundreds of reports a month. At our peak, we hit like 7,000 reports in 1 year.
Yikes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard to track everything going on in every state on here. And unfortunately, I couldn't tell her off the top of my head, but I could look to see if we had something. Now, one thing that she can do, too, if she's ever curious, is there's a couple places she can go to. One is called the National UFO Reporting Center, run by Peter Davenport. And she can pull Maryland up in his little database there. She can click on a link that shows, in this case, what basically sightings have been reported. She can go to her own state, and it has a history going backwards of all these sightings that occurred. Now, it's not always up to date to the exact day. It could be running maybe up to 30 days behind, because Peter Davenport does it, I think, mostly all himself, which is a tremendous job. But that's one place she can look immediately on there. Also, she can go into like UFOstalker.com. And she can go back to her region of the country there. And it goes back, and you can even view a degree of a history about sightings which have been seen. And it goes from really the most recent sightings on there. Those are a couple I use myself when I'm doing stuff out here.
And I was on a site today looking stuff up. And it said that the U.S. Was the top reporting country of 464 sightings in the United States. And this is just for the month of August. Canada had 64. I'm sorry. Yeah, Canada has 64. United Kingdom had 60. The four leading report states in June were Texas, 40 reports, California, 36, Florida, 33, Colorado, 23, and other states with 10 or more reports included Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New York with 20, Illinois with 18, Michigan, 17, New Jersey, 15, Missouri, 14, Indiana, North Carolina, 13, Oregon and Washington, 12, and Nevada, 10. So it's been an active last month or so.
It's pretty much consistent that way, too, Henry, because the number I was going to approximately guess was right around 400, probably came in last month off the top of my head. But those numbers are pretty consistent. And when you're looking at California and Texas, you've got a couple of the biggest states right there. In this case, especially California, with a higher population, they're pretty much always leading the pack in the number of reports coming in each month.
And that's fascinating because the light pollution out here is so high that it's impossible to see a lot of the night sky anyway. So this would have to be pretty darn bright.
It'd have to be pretty bright. And I don't get a chance to review all those. But certain times I will be involved in projects where we'll go back and review certain areas of the country on there. And like you say, Colorado is one that you'd think, wait a minute, that high in number of reports? Yes, they do. So there's some states that just kind of jump out at you. Now, Florida to me is not unexpected at all because, again, there you've got a higher population again. And then also if the weather conditions down there, it's going to be more people are going to be out more of the time in that state.
Could it also be because that's where we're shooting rockets off of?
That happens too. And there's been a number of videos on the internet that sometimes individuals really love to build up as being something spectacular. You'll see this thing going up and kind of like this big spiral coming out. And it's actually from a missile launch. There was one over off of like an area of Denmark, Sweden, someplace in that area over there, Finland, that made a lot of media. And what was happening is it was basically a Russian submarine was off the coast and launched a missile that they had some issues with on there. And it created that weird spiral in the sky. And there's also one out your way, Barbara, in California, that was launched off the coast that brought a lot of attention a couple years ago.
That big teardrop one?
That'd be, I'm pretty sure it was one of the big teardrop one out there.
Yeah.
And that does happen the same with down in Florida when they've got a night launch. Especially, I think, if you've got somebody who's the tourist down there who's not really familiar with those things going on and they just see this big bright and light in the sky and don't really associate, you know, Cape Canaveral being down here, you know.
Well, what's cool nowadays, of course, like every other person has a cell phone. And so they were taking pictures of like the teardrop, quote, launch, unquote. And a lot of these news, even the networks are saying, hey, if you've got video, let's see it. And, you know, that helps them. They've sort of like got free cub reporters out there. So they were reporting it on the news. So it's getting tougher if anything's going to be covered up anymore. If something really big happens, we already see it, and then the government has to kind of scramble to figure out how to spin it.
Exactly. And I think that's what's going to be the case one of these days. They're going to get backed into the wall where they can't cover up something. Something happens out in the open so much that you've got potentially media, individuals, cameras out there filming this, and it's going to be hard to cover it all up and make it go away.
About like one lands on the lawn to the White House?
Oh, we could only hope. I had to put that in there.
Hopefully they just look like Michael Rennie.
Please take our leader.
Well, either that or like in the movie Mars Attacks. when Jack Nicholson was the president.
That was hysterical.
Oh, that was good. I love that one. They blew up Congress.
Well,
You know, one more thing I would add on that, Luis Elizondo, is not only did I have Travis Walton in my room, but he had a Kodak moment himself. He accepted questions and answers from the audience. And the very last person to stand up, ask a question was Travis Walton.
Oh, wow.
And he recognized him and goes, I think I have to go to the bathroom right now. But actually, Travis did compliment him and the work he did. But the thing he did do is come out and say he was disappointed that so many people asked questions that in a direction that Elizondo couldn't answer, rather than going after something that he could. I think a lot of people were trying to think maybe mine will be the one question that can slip through,
yeah,
and I'll trip him up.
Trick him. Yeah.
Yeah, and this guy was way too sharp for that. Way too sharp.
Wow. I think what we're going to do is take us a quick break. We've done run over a little bit, so I don't mind. And it's going to be a short one because we got lots to talk about. And hope everybody is enjoying the show. So I'm going to let Jeff take us out, and we will be back.
Okay, well, you're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with your host, Henry Foyster, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, and tonight's always wonderful and excellent return guest, Thomas Wortman. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
Starting August 9th, it's Double the Cauldron, Double the Fun, as Para-X brings you back-to-back hours of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. First, at 8 p.m., Para-X digs into the vault to bring you an encore edition of Stirring the Cauldron. That's 10 years worth of amazing guests, interesting subjects, and all the fun from your favorite show. Then at 9 p.m., Para-X presents an all-new hour of Stirring the Cauldron as Marla explores the paranormal realm with brand new topics and all-new guests. It's Double the Cauldron, Double the Fun, as Para-X presents back-to-back hours of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. And it all begins 8 p.m. Thursday, August 9th, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight, those listening here in the chat room and those listening
Whoa.
And that wasn't mine.
Not mine. I'm no.
Guilty.
His dog is making calls now.
E.T.'s phoning home.
Listening to the Paranormal View right here on the Parax Radio Network. And as I said, I want to thank everybody for being with us tonight, including those from around the world. And speaking of around the world, Barbara, where do we have listeners from?
Well, tonight they're listening in from the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Singapore, Australia, and our little friend unknown is...
Yeah, that's because we got Thomas on.
Yeah.
Well, tonight we got with us Barbara Duncan.
I'm still here.
And Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
And we got our guest, Thomas Wertmann. We might as well just make him an honorary member of the team.
Yeah, really.
Hey, that's fine. Yeah, I always love it when I see one of your messages pop up Henry.
Oh, they must not have anybody.
No, I'm thinking when I see your message pop, I'm like, okay, what Saturday night is this I'm doing now? but I enjoy it though. It's
well,
good.
Of having you on. And speaking of that, I think it's November 1st and 2nd. Are you still planning on being down here for the paranormal event at Post Town?
I'm going to do everything I can. Okay. My calendar's, my dance card, as I call it, is filling up quickly right now. But everything I can, I'm still hobbling around a little bit, but I'm getting better.
Well, you'll like this place. It's an excellent little place, you might say. Plus, you're only about 15 minutes from my house.
And oh, that's not bad then.
20, you know. But are you supposed to be a speaker at the event?
I have to look at my calendar. That's how bad it's getting right now.
I didn't think Post Town Elementary had many UFO issues there, Henry.
Well, it's a big event that they're so. Yeah, there's people from everywhere. I believe they've got like 40 or 50 people lined up to be there. People with tables and people that's going to talk and stuff. So,
well, here brings up a really interesting idea. And that is, Thomas, do you think that an abduction experience makes people more open to the paranormal? I mean, is there something going on with the testing, the abduction, which actually lowers people's filters to paranormal activity?
You know, I've been wondering that, and that was one of the theories. I know why Henry's bugging me to come down, that I want to test out myself on air. Because we've talked about in the past, I have had some experiences that I don't come out and claim I've been abducted, but I've got experiences I just can't explain 100%. It's experiences that did they really happen? Did they not happen? Is it something I'm creating? I guess maybe only one who can give me the answer is the aliens, you know, if that's the case. But I would like to see more of a connection that way, and organizations like MUFON are opening up more towards exploring possibilities out there of connections with the paranormal, and if an experience like this does have a connection on there. Because they're even reaching out now to the cryptozoology side that they weren't into before. So they're starting to explore more avenues.
Well, it makes me kind of wonder if you think that there's more sensitivity to, say, electrical or magnetic fields because of this.
You know, I've sensed things myself when I've been about around certain areas. Like one that just blew my mind was I was doing an investigation for a UFO in a older century type home. And I don't know why, Barbara, but my whole body lit up every time I walked through one room in a house. Now, this woman to begin with had 40 dogs in her house, I think it was. A couple out back and like 40 dogs in her house. And this poor little poodle was following me around the house like crazy, like, take me home, get me out of here. But as I'm walking through this room, my whole body felt almost electric is the best way to describe it. And we got to the point that, you know, we're in the room and I'm looking around. She goes, oh, I just want to tell you that this room that we're in, she goes, that mirror that you're standing in front of, which was like an old dresser that she didn't know the history of, had been in the house as long as she'd known. She goes, I see like an apparition in that mirror. That's a dark, shadowy figure. And she goes, I see it off and on. And I said, do you see it anywhere else? She goes, no, only in that mirror. And that was every time I walked by where that mirror was at, that's when I kind of lit up. And that's why I'm really curious myself to see personally, so I can speak firsthand. Is there a connection between the two fields on there? Or I think if there is one.
Well, they often say that mirrors can be portals. And it makes me wonder, in this case, if that's the sensitivity to it is...
Well, I know there's certain times I do feel more sensitive to things out there. I always wanted to go back to one of our family houses because my mother and my sister were sensitive to things, and they'd never had any encounters that they know of on there. But I remember they were seeing in this case like my grandmother in her house after she passed away. And they both saw her at the same time. It wasn't like one saw her and the other one didn't. No, both saw her at the same time. And then the same with my grandfather. Didn't see him, but his chair was moving back and forth all by itself in the house. And it was like one of those big old heavy recliner rockers on there. So I'd love to go into some places like that and see firsthand. Is there a connection?
Now, when you investigate crop circles, correct?
Yes, I do. And matter of fact, we had a speaker at our Ohio conference who was outstanding, Jeff Wilson, who did a whole talk, out 90-minute talk on crop circle investigations. And one of the crop circles he did here in Ohio, I was part of the team that helped investigate it. And that was down in Hopewell, Ohio, back in, I think it was 2012, right around September 20th.
Now, is still one of the leading theories that it's sort of a microwave feature that causes the crops to bend the way they do?
That was the impression, because when they took the corn stalks from that field, the scientist that was alive at that time, his name was Levengood, when he analyzed the stalks that they'd taken to him, he said it appeared that they'd blown out from the inside, almost like steam had generated, like from like a microwave radiation. And the stalks were bent at a 90, and some were bent not only at a 90, but a second 90-degree angle right past that. And this was in 5 acres of corn. And this was just an incredible picture. If your listeners go to the International Crop Circle Research Association, ICCRA, I believe it's called. They can find pictures, not only that one, but other crop circles that Jeff's group has worked on. We were actually laughing last weekend, or a couple weekends ago, when we had our conference, that there was one that they went down and did it like in North Carolina. Part of the team went to North Carolina. Part of the team went out to like Iowa. And the ones that went down to North Carolina hit the real thing. The ones that went to Iowa didn't. So needless to say, there was a lot of joking and kidding going on. That, hey, how was your trip to Iowa? But when you really see something like that in corn... it's not like two guys like Bob and Dave get a board out and bend the corn stalks over. You just can't do that.
If anybody's ever been around corn, no, you can't.
Corn stalks are way
too hard.
Well, plus, if you're using microwave on corn, you just get, you know, popcorn.
And when you're looking at a field 400 feet across, roughly, as the pattern, and it's in a spiral pattern.
Forever.
It's just incredible. Oh, yeah. It would take forever. And the only thing we found out there was there was this plastic device that had an LED on it. It was right around the middle circle. And I went into Amazon and started looking around on Amazon. I actually found out what it was. There was a device that you could actually put around your neck that had a compass on it with an LED little beacon. And I think what happened is somebody came in the night before, which we found a path going into that crop circle from the night before. And they were actually trying to get information, pictures, and other stuff out there while nobody was around. It wasn't that they added anything. It was just that they were trying to maybe document stuff on their own for some reason.
But how would they know the circle was there?
Well, that's an interesting thing. Sometimes we don't get an exact story because when we went down to do that investigation, I got down there at like 5 in the morning, something like that, down at Hopewell. And we met at a park maybe 3 to 5 miles away from where the circle was. And a reporter showed up because evidently he found out we're even meeting there. And he says, I'd like to go along and photograph that if I could. And Jeff was every bit like I would have been. No, you're not part of the team. We're doing an investigation. We'll give you information when we're done. You know, but he wanted to get in right away to make a news story. But it's like, how did he find out about that? But the picture itself, there was a video a friend of mine discovered less than a week before that on YouTube. It was taken from an aircraft. And he sent the link to the video to Jeff, and Jeff identified where that area was and was able to track the farmers and stuff down within a few days and get into that field, which is an impressive job itself.
Now, Jeff's the one you was telling me about the crop circles?
Yes.
And you have contact info on him?
I can get you that, yes. I can forward that to you, Henry.
Because I tried to find him, and I couldn't find contact info or anything. So
he can be difficult to get a hold of on there. I had a challenge just trying to get him for our conference, but if you can get him on, he's great.
Okay. I'll see what we can do on that.
Okay.
So, I do have a question from Dark Moon. And the question is there a connection between orbs and UFOs?
Well, can I say positively? No, I can't. But I believe there is a connection because the orbs themselves, they've sighted some in our region up here over Lake Erie. Out over the lake, I've had some credible witnesses talking about the orbs they've seen off the lake. And they weren't boat lights or things like that. They're actually orbs floating over the water. We've also had, in this case, individuals reporting objects coming out of the water, which have fallen in the category of USOs. And they came out of the water and actually traveled over to witnesses. And I can't deny that there's a connection. One of the old-time investigators, going way back to the 70s on there, was saying that he had kind of this aha moment when he was in a building and saw some orbs. And then the thought crossed his mind, wait a minute, if I'm outside the building and this thing is in the sky, I'm thinking it's a UFO. He says, what if they're not the same? And they may be that connection between them on there. I can't deny that.
Now, Thomas, you remember, I can't remember which astronauts and if it was the International Space Station, but they also claimed to see orbs going through the spacecraft.
I can't remember which one that was either, Barbara, but I do remember the story.
And what did they conclude was coming from? Was it cosmic radiation?
If I remember correctly, that's what it was. You're testing my memory now, Barbara. But I think that's what it was in this case.
Where were you on July 27th, 1952?
I can't even tell you what I ate last night. Come on.
Heck, I got, in hashtag games, I get laughs making jokes about it. Why did I come into this room?
No, I just remember, I can't remember if it was Neil Armstrong or one of them was saying that they kept seeing orbs flying through the spacecraft. What it was, I'm not sure if they ever came across anything of what it would be.
You know, there's so much out there. I cannot remember on air the whole story about that, but I do remember the orbs going through the space station. I cannot remember the outcome on that one, Barbara. I wish I could.
I found it past.
Now you give me something to make a note on the research after this tonight.
Well, there was always some time. I mean, the spacecraft itself was supposedly sterile when they went into it. So there wouldn't be dust, per se. But these were large enough where they could actually see it. And I know that they were thinking that it's possibly cosmic radiation going through, but why it would be in the form of an orb is beyond.
That I wouldn't know, why that would be in the form of an orb. But I could see the cosmic radiation going through the craft. I mean, those craft themselves are paper thin, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be interesting with some of the new craft that they're going to be putting up there. The ones like Robert Bigelow is designing out, which are basically like inflatable, like a balloon that's inflated up there.
Wow.
It'd be interesting to see if there's more of that type of thing.
Well, isn't that what they are building some of the pods on the International Space Station for? They're adding on, but they're all inflatable.
Right, because they're lightweight. You can have this large room, basically, that expands out once you get it up there. And that way they can make this thing even bigger without at minimal expense, I guess you could say. Bigelow's kind of turning it, his technology is kind of turning into almost like a large hotel, in a sense.
Yeah.
Hence.
Like the space station in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, isn't there a lot of space junk supposed to be flying through the air up there? If those things are only paper thin, aren't they afraid something might strike it?
That would be one of my concerns if I was up there. that really would be. I mean, because there's so much junk, and there's a couple websites you can go into that you can actually look at the satellites that's up there. Exactly. That's the best way to describe it. It's completely frightening when you see how much is hovering above us.
I don't think gray tape would work very well.
No. Well, then, too, even certain things like some research I did, Barbara, before our conference that we had over in New Jersey, iridium flare satellites are these satellites which have these huge panels on them. That when they turn the right angle at the right time of day, you see this mammoth flash in the sky in their direction. But it's the sun reflecting off the panels. They've brought several of them down to a different orbit because they're pretty much past their time, but they don't want to get rid of them. So now not only did you have something up there originally, you're bringing it down to a different orbit, changing where it's at, and then you're launching something else up there to take its place. And you've got so much junk up there, it's scary. And then what's to say that you didn't have a launch of a rocket and part of that rocket particles, the fragments are still up there that didn't come down.
That's true.
Yeah, and they're traveling at pretty good speed too, aren't they?
Well, you figure when something is orbiting, off the top of my head, I think it's like 14,000 miles an hour. Something's orbiting around the Earth. Because it only takes roughly about an hour to make an orbit.
Depending on the speed, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, then the speed and the altitude it is. And also, they're going to be launching things even higher with some of these newer telescopes that's coming out. They're going to be putting those out in higher orbits even. So, I mean, there's going to be so much junk out there, I'd be afraid. But yet, if you think about it, all the years that the space station's been in existence, we haven't heard of any strikes on the station yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, being that.
Or at least they haven't told us anything.
Exactly. Exactly. Although, if you look at some of the pictures close, Henry, maybe you'll see some duct tape covering up some holes.
Binds the galaxy together.
That's right.
The thing is that also these things are moving really fast, and a lot of them are small. So you don't even see them. And if you're on an EV suit and it just goes right through you, like in the movie Gravity, you're like, why isn't Bob replying? You know, and meanwhile, he's just got a hole through his entire body and he's gone.
Right. I was watching some old 1950s space movie the other day.
Oh, great.
Yes. It was on one of the free TV networks out there. Yeah. So I think it's one of these shows that only ran like one season, and that was it. And they featured a story about the rockets up in space, and here's the guy getting struck by the fragment. And I could just really picture that happening.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In his case, I mean, it just shows you how antiquated it was. They had time enough to get him back inside the space, inside the ship before his blood boiled, you know. And
of course. Well, they've indicated even if you had an evac suit that ruptured on Mars, you wouldn't do the whole total recall thing. I mean, not as bad as that. It would still be unpleasant and rather fatal, but it wouldn't be the whole, you know, inflating head thing, and bugging eyes and all that.
Why don't we have to Arnold?
Yeah.
Well, and Ronnie Cox, actually.
That's right. Know. Ronnie Cox, too, right? That would be the first time Arnold's eyes bulged out, you know.
Before we go to another break, I got another quick little one here that I come up with today when I was looking around. The Miami Herald over the weekend made its endorsements in a local congressional race, an otherwise routine development that is making headlines for an odd reason. The candidate endorsed by the newspaper in the Republican primary not only believes in aliens, she claims to have been abducted by them.
Well, she's about my vote.
I was reading that over right before the show, Henry, and I saw that, came out maybe, 4 weeks ago, something like that, 3 weeks ago?
Oh, wow.
I remember reading that story on there.
She didn't do well in the primary.
And I'm thinking, I can kind of understand that. I mean, it's just
probably,
think about
probably not the platform to, you know, put on the banner.
No, I'm not running under Democrat or Republican, running under a real third party candidacy.
Was it your reticulated party?
That's right. When I saw it, I'm like, oh my, is she trying to do this as a long shot to get in? You know, something to get attention.
Florida, right?
Florida.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. It's more prevalent now, though, because things like ghost hunting and UFOs and all that has come to the forefront even more, with so many people actually doing it and stuff like that, that you would think that she'd get a lot of support.
Well, this one was a real test of what type of support you would get, I think.
Yeah.
An indication down there. That, I mean, even though it has changed a lot, the impression on here, because it's almost every couple days I look at certain networks and they're putting out stories about new discoveries in space.
Oh, yeah.
And you see that changing, and you've got scientists coming out and saying in 20 years, we should have an answer if ET is there. I mean, that's a pretty bold prediction right there.
Although just mathematically, it's kind of probable.
Well, yeah, and Elizondo made a comment over there. He says, well, really, the Earth is like one giant UFO. What would people think that, you know, the chances of us existing would be, you know?
Yep. But we're out in the boondocks in the galaxy. We're out in the backwater. Mega, you know, I'm surprised anyone comes to visit at all, except we're like, oh, it's kind of pretty. If they they have a concept of beauty, obviously.
Right. And it's, I mean, we've got such a great earth here, you know, and with these things, but there's chances are, I mean, you look at the mathematical possibilities, there has to be life out there, period.
Yeah.
There's got to be.
If you look at the planet and you look at if water is necessary for organic life as we know it, they're finding water now in more and more places. And that water probably wasn't on Earth, but was brought here by a comet or a meteor, etc.
That's right. One of the talks that they had, when I was at the conference, somebody was talking to was bringing that whole theory up that the water here came not from our natural Earth, but it was brought here by comets. All the impacts over so many millenniums on there. I mean, when I was back in school, I never gave that a thought. But now when I started hearing that whole subject, that whole talk, I'm like, wow. If it got here that way, why can't it happen someplace else?
Exactly.
Yeah, like tetragrades. So,
When I see something like the first ever Planet of the Apes movie with Charlton Heston, and they're going through the desert, and one of the guys say, you know, Captain, you know, life, and they get down there in this little green sprig, and I realize that is life. That's in their opinion. They thought they were on a different planet, so they thought it was extraterrestrial life. So what if a lot of these extraterrestrial planets come to here because we're this entire planet biosphere is teeming with life, just not as much sentient life, but all the flora and the fauna. I mean, it may just be baffling to some other species. We're like, but it's just us back home.
You're right, because I mean, we've got such an abundance here. You've got plant life, animal life, I mean, microbial. You've got so many types. Yeah. And another world may be very limited on the variety on there. I mean, they may not have a plant life like what we have.
Well, we find that, like I said, the tardigrades can live in...
Oh, the tardigrades are so cute.
Adorable, and they can live pretty much anywhere.
And you can't kill them.
Outer space, whatever.
Yeah, you can't kill them. I wonder, did they ever try a hammer?
That'd be a little tiny for a hammer. Kind of overkill.
Well, yeah, but because usually all they do is like they subject it to like, you know, pressure and temperature. I'm like, what about just the heel of a shoe?
No, I mean, they're too cute.
They are cute.
Well, I think we're going to take our last break. We still got lots more to go over. I still got a whole page, and Barbara always has at least two or three pages, so I'm sure she has a lot too. Hopefully, have to make Thomas talk a lot. That's all. So.
Oh yeah, that's all right. And by the way, you were right. I am supposed to be down there at the conference. I apologize for not remembering that, but I'll tell you.
I am booked on there also. I mean,
I noticed, I saw the website, and there's your photo.
Our pictures are side by side, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, I saw Henry. I should have looked for you. Okay.
Right side by side. So, seeing you down there, and I'll talk to you more about that as it gets closer. But who knows? You might be able to come down. You know, like the day before or something. I take you someplace. Do a little ghost hunt or something with you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to work my work schedule out, but should be able to do that, no problem.
Hey, no problem then. So anyway, we're going to take another quick little break. And if you do have questions, private chat them either to myself or Ceiling Cat, and we will get those answered. And if you're listening from somewhere else, you can send us a message to theparanormalview@gmail.com, and we will get those answered for you. So, Jeff, won't you take us out?
Yes, you're listening to Paranormal View on para-x.com with your host, Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's wonderful guest, Thomas Wortman. Pardon me, I choked to death, apparently. So stay tuned for more of the Paranormal View after the break.
So, Tim, Around here at Para X, we're considered oldies because we've been here, right?
You know, yeah, but you know, there's nothing wrong with old. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good oldies.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all, because all you have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, little sis. No, not the Who, the Shock.
Rat, where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View. Back where long.
Please, dear.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to bed. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear. Line.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio, programming for the open mind.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. I hope you're enjoying the show. And those listening here and those listening from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. With that, we got Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
And we've got Barbara Duncan.
I'm still here.
And we have Thomas Wortman.
It's still here, and that's my coffee machine in the background, too, in case you're wondering.
So during breaks, I have to turn up the volume on the mic. So then I have to make sure that I get it turned back down when we start to go back. I blast everybody's eardrums out, and I don't do that. So, but you know, I was reading on like I said earlier today, on a lot of the stuff, and there was a listing in Australia where they seen a barbell-shaped UFO. Have you heard about that one?
I was reading a little bit about that one earlier today, and I've seen some reports on those before of barbell-type UFOs, which are kind of unusual. Percentage-wise, you don't see very many of those listed whatsoever on there. Some of the data I was putting together, I think there was only like a couple of them reported within like X number of years, even in certain states. Most all of them are typically the spherical shape or even kind of like a Saturn shaped object on there, as compared to the barbell shape. But that one is kind of unusual on there, Henry.
And kind of odd too, don't you think? Because if you look at, well, at least the 2001 Space Odyssey, that genre, where you actually have the gravity as far as a circular thing, not as a barbell almost, but it's realistically could happen.
Right. There was one I was trying to get some answers on. We had one here in Ohio going back off the top of my head, 1980s on air. It was kind of reported almost like a barbell or two objects together that looked like they were connected together. And the one observatory in the Cleveland area said it was a gaseous anomaly of some sort. And what the people were seeing is like Saturn and Jupiter side by side. It was giving the appearance they were being connected together. Yeah, that was exactly, that was the explanation given. And I tried calling the observatory to get an answer on that.
And what are you guys talking about?
And I said, you know, I've got some questions. I'm doing some research and told them I was looking at UFOs, but I'm doing some research out here and I'd like to know about how if two planets were close together and appear to be connected, is it termed like a gaseous anomaly? And how does that occur? And I never got one response back from them. They probably said, there's another one of those UFO nuts trying to figure that story out.
I have a hard time with that.
Yeah, I mean, if they were very, very close together, I can see almost like the light blending together. But other than that...
Well, I mean, Saturn and Jupiter do conjunct, but not normally that close together where you could see it as a connection.
No, and I replicated it, and they were reasonably close together. And to me, I would still like more of an explanation on how that can happen, you know. But those barbell ones, that one like you brought up, Henry, that is unusual. That's more the rarity out there. Like I say, I've only seen a few reports of those come up.
So I know there's all kinds of different spaceships. They talk about triangles and all kinds of different shapes. Do you think that might be different species of aliens having different types of ships like that?
Well, difference of it could be different species, or some of the stuff I was researching before earlier this afternoon was going back to basically, you know, the time thing, that maybe they're here now just in a different time. And if you look at it in that aspect, I mean, look at our technologies, how they evolved.
Yeah.
You go from the horse and carriage to the Model E, 1950s cars. Now we've got electric cars that Tesla's launching up into space.
He asked, what should I send up?
There you go. But you look at it that way, and if we have different technologies here, what if we're not seeing a glance at different technologies through time?
Very well could be.
That may have the ability to come back. Not just looking at something which is coming from, as the old science fiction movies go into, they used to say millions of miles away, but millions of light years away. What's not to say that it's something that's not traveling through time or interdimensional?
Now, we've tried to send up spaceships with astronauts, not just our country, but Russia and probably a couple others. Not all of them are successful. Some of them's blown up and people's killed. With all the UFOs that's supposed to be floating around, coming to this planet and everything, do you think that it's odd that one hasn't actually crashed in our backyard or something that we could actually see?
That the government hasn't gotten to first?
Yeah, exactly. But I think something has crashed. Because I just have this, call it a gut feeling for lack of something better. Maybe it's because of my own experiences on there, like we talked a little bit about Barbara. But I have the feeling that they're not infallible. They make mistakes. And that was something that is like during one of the regressions on there, it came out, is they can make mistakes. They make mistakes too. Like, I mean, they're not perfect, you know. And if they're not perfect, to me, things have had to crash. And things have had to been recovered. And kind of like you talked about there, Jeffrey, it's the guys in olive drab out there grabbing the stuff for somebody who gets to it first that takes and ferries it away.
Well,
I mean, you've had the stories about Roswell and down in Missouri and things like that.
If you stop and think about most of the Earth being water anyway, they may have crashed, but deep in the ocean, and we're not going to find it.
Deep in the ocean, or going back to the old 1950s movies up in the Arctic and buried under ice. That's right.
Well, isn't there supposed to be a hole up there somewhere in the
Arctic?
Yeah, a hole where there's a base where the spaceships are supposed to be going down in. They have their own,
like the Hollow Earth. concept?
That's it.
It goes all the way through the earth, but I mean, they're supposed to place up there where they even have restricted flight where you're not supposed to fly over that area.
I think that's Antarctica, isn't it?
Is it? Well, it's one.
There's some treaty that you we're not allowed to go to Antarctica. We're like, what? Why? The penguins are there.
Yeah, that's the story behind it on air. And that goes back to Admiral Byrd. Supposedly took an expedition down there, and a ship was damaged because of, I guess you could say, a firefight with a UFO. And basically, they were told to stay out and not come back.
By the aliens?
By the aliens. And it was like, what, a year or so ago that was a Buzz Aldrin tried going down to some place and there's problems, and they said that was a whole thing. It was in that same area again, and he had to come back. I don't know if I buy the whole story, because I've seen some of the things that they brought up, because part of it goes back to the Nazis. During World War II, we were trying to establish some bases around the Arctic.
Right.
And they were really claiming they were developing all these technologies, basically going into almost like a partnership with the aliens, in a sense, if that's possible. And
sorry for the whole shooting at you thing.
Yeah, and they've showed pictures of some of the areas where they were at down there, and they're basically abandoned. Because, again, they found out, too, that that weather was just so severe at that time frame, you couldn't do it, period. Wow. And I think some of those stories are big exaggerations, because I've got, I don't know how many books on it, Henry, that I haven't had a chance to read all of them, that really go off on the deep side of those type of stories on there. There's also been pictures circulating out there that here's this UFO over like a ship or something like that from that region, and it really wasn't the case on there. It was just a picture which somebody gave a unique spin on it that created that story on there.
Now, Patsy wrote in the chat that it's McMurdo Station, Antarctica.
That sounds right. I couldn't remember the name, but I remember reading about it.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you was talking about UFOs underwater and
that
stuff.
That sounds right. I couldn't remember the name, but I remember reading about it.
In Cleveland, right close to the lake there. Is the lake deep enough for UFOs to have a base under the water there?
You know, we had somebody come in and talk at one of our conferences about that, that they believe there are underground bases or underwater bases up there. Some of the areas on the lake are actually very shallow. One of my friends has a condo up around the Sandusky area, and you can actually wade out quite a ways before the water's going to get over my head, and I'm about 6'4". And you think of how far you'd have to go out or how deep that water would be to have a craft underwater that somebody wouldn't detect, somebody wouldn't hit with some of the different ships out there.
Right.
And some of the stories I'm seeing out there, I don't think they're that factual because the lake is too shallow parts. When that wind whips up out there and the storms kick up, that lake can change more drastic than almost any of them because of its shallow depth across the whole lake. So I don't know if there's bases under that particular lake. I'd term it that way. Now, I'm not saying definitely there's not there that there's things not off of California where you've got deeper water out in that area off of like Catalina area potentially on there, down in the Caribbean. Because you've got so many areas down there that to me would be much more plausible. Also, it's weather's a heck of a lot nicer, too. But I know when I was down in the Caribbean stuff down there diving, that was going to the back of my mind how many places down there had much deeper water and also extremely clear water to me, which would be much better than someplace like at the lakes on there. Years ago, if you think about it, he had so much potential pollution around the lakes and so forth on there. To me, I would be finding something of much fresher water much more cleaner water and deeper water than what Lake Erie has overall. Now, there could be some places I'm not aware of up there that are much deeper on there. It may be more conducive, but Lake Erie in general is a much shallower lake.
Well, has there been any recent sightings around Ohio that you've been investigating?
Well, we had one that was one of those unique cases that popped up not too long ago. And a lot of times we get the proverbial lights in the sky, as they're generally called on air, where people are seeing lights from a distance. But occasionally we get these stories that pop up out of nowhere. And that happened back July 31st. An individual was down towards Mount Vernon, Ohio. And this is another scary thing out there too, Barbara. Sometimes people's geography is not that strong because on one of the websites they posted an alien was seen down by Mount Vernon, Ohio. And a person saying, Mount Vernon, Ohio, they're really messed up. Isn't that over by Washington, D.C.? I'm thinking, don't they know that other states can have the same name? City. And I'm like, okay, let's move on from this one. But the story came out that this individual was driving down a highway, Highway 13, if I remember correctly, and kind of comes around a turn, and all of a sudden, out of this cornfield comes this 7 to 8 foot tall, skinny figure that appeared to be kind of like a brownish to gray in color on there, that had extremely long, lanky arms and legs, but they said the feet and hands appeared much out of proportion to the rest of the body, like they were much larger on there. And that this creature, whatever it was, turned around and looked at him, had like black eyes. And it took only a few steps to get completely across this highway and disappear off into another field on there. Now, the individual who saw it, when he popped around the corner, his first thought was, oh, it's probably a deer, you know, because, I mean, it's that getting to be a time of year again, and we have tons of deer here in Ohio. And he did the double take, and he's like, wait a minute, that's not a deer. What am I really looking at? And the guy did have a background where he was in the service on there. He kind of regrouped his senses on there and said, okay, let's put all my facts together. And he reached out and contacted MUFON, because now MUFON is kind of branching out also into the cryptozoology side, because there may be relationships between not just UFOs, but creatures potentially like, let's say, a Bigfoot or something along those lines. Because, I mean, people are reporting unusual creatures occasionally around UFOs. So let's investigate that, too. Well, then when they reached out to us, one of my head field investigators went out and did the research on it. And he went out to the site, talked to the witness on there, and the witness, he said, seemed credible. But the problem is when you go to look for the evidence then, a lot of times the evidence that we have is the individual's story. In this case, they couldn't find any tracks of any sort going through the fields on there. And you would have thought if there would have been a deer, there would have been deer tracks at least back in there if something had been going that fast through those fields. But they couldn't find any tracks whatsoever. So it's just one of those mysteries again. But that one, people picked up on that one real quick on here, Henry, because I had like four networks contact me in one morning. So I kind of locked the door of my office and I was doing interviews. You didn't hear this, but it was on company time. but they picked up on that because it was something unique and out of the ordinary. I even did an interview for a college newspaper the other day that called me up, and we talked about a half an hour about that whole story on there. It's one that we saw made a determination on what happened yet. It hasn't been closed 100%, but I can just tell you this is what they've kind of done in the process, and they'll continue to see if they can find any tracks or anything out there, but chances are unlikely now because of the weather we've had recently.
Has that only been one reported sighting of it?
In Ohio, I was reaching out to some friends of mine, and they said that there had been several other states who'd reported seeing the same thing.
You sent a picture to me?
Yes, it was the one I sent a picture to you of. It was, again, kind of like a long, spindly armed and legged creature.
Yep.
There were several down in West Virginia reported in that area. Several years ago, we had a report in Ohio that we kind of wrote off as a hoax because the witness reported a creature that had legs were hinged basically backwards of a human. And they reported having something like a longer neck. Again, it was like 7 feet tall. But when they started researching it enough, what they were also discovering is the person putting out the story was also writing a book on cryptozoology.
Wow.
And there was a kind of like, okay, is this something you're trying to do to help promote your book and so forth on there? That was one thing. I was pursuing a different avenue, but I couldn't find any results on it. But to me, some of the animals that have their legs hinged backwards are ostriches.
Mm. Yeah, but they're not really hinged backwards. What you're looking at isn't their knees. It's the heel of their feet.
Yeah.
That's what drives me. Yeah.
Yeah. But I researched that side, Jeffrey, and there's actually farms down in southern Ohio which raise ostriches.
I did a Super Bowl commercial with an ostrich, so, you know.
And I'm like, it's like, okay, at least it was something to look at, you know, to say, okay, let's try to even eliminate this. And I couldn't find any reports of people who had lost them down there where they'd gotten out. Wow. But the witness's description almost matched that of an ostrich or like an emu, something along those lines.
Emus are cute.
Yeah.
Did they ask him how much he'd been drinking?
No. but it's interesting, though, when you see the reports, a lot of the report contains in there, I was not drinking at the time at some point. Funny. Or nobody else in the car was drinking at the time.
There you go.
That does come out. Or the ones that you get a lot. And when the stories come out like this, I thought, I'm glad to see it's not only me. But I don't know how many reports I got from, like, United Kingdom. When you mentioned that earlier, they were very high in the reports because I used to do investigations over there. Their first line was, I went outside to smoke a cigarette. And it seemed like 50% of the people in England must have been smoking cigarettes based on those reports.
Ew.
We watched, yeah. We got that BritBox, and I've been watching a lot of the detective shows and stuff like that, the cop shows. And it seems like everybody is smoking over there in the shows. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, we had, matter of fact, it was a Cheryl Costa when she gave her talk a few weeks ago. She said the same thing, that she was reading over reports. It seemed like half the people said the same thing. I was outside smoking a cigarette, or they're outside walking their dog. One of the two things on there.
Yeah, I one night when I was working in North Carolina, working midnight shift at General Electric, and I was out driving the forklift. And it was like I was driving along. I looked up, and all of a sudden, it looked like a bright UFO right there. I got so scared, I jumped off the forklift. And then come to find out, it was one of the big streetlights ahead. So.
Oh, man. And here goes the forklift knocking down the streetlight, right?
Rolling, though. I had to jump back on it. But, I mean, people, I guess, can look at something, and right away their mind morphs into something else, you know, and you're thinking it's something else.
You're right. I mean, it's some of the reports we see coming in, the witness only sees it maybe like 5-10 seconds, very short flash.
Yep.
And it's your interpretation you put on it, because I've gotten pictures in where the witness shows this very unusual object up in the sky. But then if you know what to look for, here the witness may be looking, let's say, towards the sun at a certain angle, and you see this object up there. And what they don't see is the pole holding the light away from the light pole.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see this object just kind of hovering in space.
Right.
And you're right. I mean, when you look at that picture, unless you really, really look at it close, you can't distinguish that that pole is there. And it's easy to do that. I mean, I've gotten some classic ones, and I got one in from like out in Las Vegas area. This person sent me photographs that they were going down the road in their car, and they photographed these unusual objects. And what I look for in a report is some key things. Like in their case, well, I didn't see this until I looked at the pictures later on. And when they looked at the pictures later on, that's when they saw the objects. Well, I went back and did my analysis on the photographs, and the objects they were seeing were not really a mile away like they thought. They were really closer to about 2 feet away, and there were bugs on the windshield. And it comes back from my background in photography, knowing in this case the depth of field and things like that under camera, that when you looked at it, you look at where things are in focus at and where they're out of focus at. And the objects on the windshield, the camera at that point was focused on something, picking up something much closer and locking in on it. The objects farther away were more blurry. So it wasn't really far away. It was actually much closer. And when he looked at the photos really close, it was actually just bug splatters. and he hate to tell the witness that, because, I mean, they're being very honest in what, you know, they think it is.
Yeah.
Well, also, people don't understand.
Well, you can be really polite and just say,
go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say, you could just be really polite and say, do you own a squeegee?
Well, it's also the people don't understand the idea that you do have floaters in your eyes. And when you get to the bright light, it makes it even more pronounced, and you are going to see things.
Right. And I've had some also where we picked up reflections off of the windshield, where somebody's inside the car, or for that matter, inside the house. I had some photos come in from Canada that this witness was showing objects over like a lake area at a distance, and you could see like these glowing orbs. And I'm looking at the photographs, and all of a sudden I got the impression that they were not outside in their deck. They were actually inside their house photographing through patio windows out over their deck. And we emailed back and forth. I said, by chance, were you inside the house when you did that? Yes. I said, would you do me a favor and turn around and take a picture of the inside of your room? And here's like these three lights right behind them, you know. And again, you hate to do that, but the thing is, it's, yeah, well, you just have to, because you got to be honest with yourself. But then there's times that you've had some that you've gone down through the photographs, and you can't really explain it off that way. You just don't have the answer.
I remember there's a lot of people saying that there's something behind the moon, and it's that 10th planet, etc. And they take a picture of the moon, but what they don't realize is that a camera, unless you get the really ultra-modern ones that are mirrorless, all have mirrors in there, and you're getting a reflection off of that. So you do see the reflection, and it's like a blue orb behind
the moon. And I don't know how many pictures we get, Barbara, somebody photographing directly either at the moon or at the sun.
Ow.
And when you get this photograph, they're seeing these orbs, and it's really coming from the light of the sun itself. It's not a second object in there. It's coming from the sun or from the moon. And I've even had a couple people send me pictures of the moon at night through clouds and claiming it's a UFO. But that's the one thing I also like about modern technology. If they're using cell phones, it helps give me time and date, and then potentially GPS location and direction of view. Mm-hmm. So it makes it much more easier because you've got some people who don't, I mean, they're trying to report things the way they remember it. But I've had some who don't know directions very well. And when they think they're looking east, they're actually looking west.
Yeah. I was going.
Oh, I get that all the time. I'll be literally thinking, which way do I have to go? And I have to literally picture the country for a second. I'm like, okay, I want to go that way.
I was one night and work, and there's trees around pretty much beside the road and over the road. And as I was driving down the road, I see these lights, not too much higher than the trees. Through the trees, you could see them blinking and stuff, and there was no sound. Now, what in the world is that? I thought I was seeing another UFO. Until I got to a clearing to where I could actually see. It was a plane towing one of those signs that was flashing. Oh. And there's no sound to it, but you could see lights, and it looked like a big spacecraft.
Could have been a glider.
Yeah, well, you couldn't tell until you got in the clearing. But, yeah, I was ready to turn around and run the other way.
Well, you know, we've also got now newer blimps out up here in Ohio. I mean, you've got Goodyear Corporation,
right,
who for years made the blimps, but now they're actually flying Zeppelins, and they've got a different sounding motor on them than what they had in the past. I used to get reports in from people who described seeing a blimp shaped object. And it would say it would be illuminated and stuff like that. And one thing I liked is I had contacts down at Goodyear I was able to reach out to, and they would confirm if the blimp was in that region or not at that time. And they were very good about doing that. And I had a few cases where they confirmed, yeah, you're right, it was there that night or that day, right at that time.
Wow.
But do you think here the people live down that region, and they were flying almost all the time down there? And they couldn't recognize a blimp at night, especially when it had Goodyear on the side of it.
Okay, now here's a good question, because we have people in the paranormal. There's a group of people that want investigators to come in because they want to know that their house is haunted, to the point where they won't take "no, it isn't" for an answer. Do you find that true with UFO sightings, where people just won't take "no" for an answer?
Oh, yes. There's that famous saying, "I know what I saw."
Right.
And that happens. I mean, you mentioned Lake Erie earlier. I did investigations in March of like 2010, where I was freezing my little here. I'm from living in an area which is like a former Polish community. So I call it, I'm freezing my keister off up here. It was extremely cold on the lake in March, and I'm going out there like 10, 11 nights in a row, and the witness keeps reporting objects every single night coming from the same direction, turning the exact same way with the exact same characteristics. And it made major media, major news, international news out there, that this guy was seeing UFOs and stuff, and all it was aircraft. And here it is, I mean, 8 years later, people are still bringing that up. Well, remember in 2009, 2010, something like that, there were all these sightings over Lake Erie. I know, I investigated them. And just so that you know, I said the person that was involved with the sightings was also involved in theater. Not to say anything bad about people in theater, Jeffrey. But in this case, he was working as trying to get into stage at Playhouse Square Theaters here in Cleveland. And also I found out he just moved into an apartment like 2 months before from where he lived at before, and he had this great view over the lake that he never had before. So he was seeing things he hadn't seen before and had this association. And I think what happened was is once it started snowballing and the story started rolling, it started building. He couldn't get away from it at that point. But it's it's upsetting because certain times you'll have not a number of people, but some people out there that you know positively what they saw, and they will not buy into it no matter what you say. You could have the International Space Station land in their backyard. No, that wasn't it.
Things they pointed out, people are committed to being right even when they're committed to being right about being wrong.
Right. And the worst case was one where I had to tell the witness he was looking at Venus. And I knew what his response was going to be before I even told him, because he was just so adamant about the fact that without a shadow of a doubt, this is the real thing. This is the smoking gun on air. And somebody
was
who
stationary and really pretty and bright.
Yeah, and it appeared the same night in several in the same location of the sky and had the exact same motion several nights in a row. It took several hours to go down over the horizon, but yet it was summoning him, Barbara. It was calling him to come back out and look at it each night. And he was just so fixated on it. You could just see it's not going to go good when you tell him what it is, especially when I even duplicated with computer graphics exactly what he was seeing and overlaid the star pattern over his video and said, this is what you've got. And he just called me all sorts of sorts of names. And the bad part was the person who said it was an incredible video that should be on a TV show was not a UFO researcher. He's actually an actor who was put on a UFO show.
Like a recreationist kind of actor, one of those?
Exactly. It was that type of an actor on there where he appears to be an authority and he's really not. He's just an actor.
I recreated Edouard René de Beaulieu for a Statue of Liberty documentary, but that doesn't make me an expert on the Statue of Liberty.
Far from it. And the unfortunate thing is you do run into it out there, just like in the paranormal field. And what you have to do is when you're out there talking to the witnesses, and again, most people just want an answer. You know, they're looking for an honest answer. But you'll come across this occasional person that you just get that feeling right out of the gate. I know what I saw. You're not going to tell me otherwise. Matter of fact, I had a person at one of our state meetings that was describing something that the characteristics were of Chinese lanterns. And I didn't say that they were Chinese lanterns, but I said these are some factors that you want to look at when you're looking for a possible explanation. I said, what direction was the wind moving that day? And their reply back was, it doesn't matter what direction the wind was moving. This is what I saw. Were they moving in the same direction of the wind? That's all I'm asking. I don't know, but this is what I saw, and this is what they have to be. And you just know right at that point, okay, let's don't pursue this any farther on there. Let's let this one die.
our time has just flown right on by. It doesn't seem like it's been 2 hours, but it sure has. We got about 6 minutes yet. I know when does UFO sightings, are they like come in groups certain times of the year? How are they bunched up?
Well, you tend to get a lot of this stuff during the summer times when most people are out. You tend to find that the numbers are higher, like on the weekends, especially in the evenings on air when most people are out during the summer, doing things during the summer. But what you find out also, if you went and looked, I think, at the whole year, you also have to look at that regionally too, Henry. You have to look at areas like, for example, you go down to Florida. Florida, you're going to have things more consistent across the whole year because of the much more, the better weather down there. California, especially like Southern California, you'd find things much more consistent across the whole year. But if you go into climates like what we have up here, like you said, we've had rain and so forth on there. the times when you have high periods of rain, or especially the snow, are January, February, late December, potentially on air. The report's going to decline just because of the more inclement weather and people not being out. The other thing that I've done, too, is I've looked up some things that also show that it's also the reports change with the technologies out there. That when you had things being done by hand, you didn't see my reports documented. But now that things are done by computer, the number of cases are going up drastically. But what you're seeing is maybe a little change now where people are doing more things by smartphones and stuff like that. So now you have to kind of adapt over with your reporting method, I think, to go towards those people who are using smartphones pretty much all the time and not using computers.
Right. Or like they say, you know, look, it's a UFO. Grab the worst camera we have.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, wow. Isn't it also that if you get people who normally aren't outside looking at the sky, now all of a sudden are looking at the sky, it's amateur hour, and they really don't know what they're looking at.
Oh, yes. And we get reports like that all the time where people are just describing what they're seeing. And you're right, a number may not know what they're looking at. I had one I'm researching now. I'm just about to close up where the witness was seeing Saturn. Everything they described on there was, okay, I saw this several nights in a row, the exact same place low on the horizon. And they probably hadn't been outside that much, but now they're outside, they're seeing something unusual. The right. Same as with the International Space Station when it comes over.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Time is just about gone. We have Ohio Jeff in the chat room. His name's Jeff Wilson. He's got books out called Ohio Legends, and we had him a couple months ago. We're going to have him on not next week, but the week after with book number two. So it ought to be pretty interesting. Everybody liked all the little stuff he has about Ohio. And it's real interesting books to read. So you can look them up and get them from him and everything. With that, I'm going to let Thomas give his information out, how to get in contact with him. If you've seen a UFO and you want to record it or report it, I should say, how you can do that, or if you want to follow him on his website. So, Thomas, won't you do that real quick?
Okay. If they want to reach out to me or check for local meetings on it, and go to ohiomufon.com. That posts all of our local meetings in the area on there. It also has contact information for the group. Or if they also want to get a hold of me, I've got another email, which is mufon.twertman, W-E-R-T-M-A-N. At gmail.com is my own personal email. They can reach out to me on there.
All right. Well, it's been another wonderful show. It just went by too fast. So I want you to stay on until after we're off, and we'll talk with you for a few minutes. Jeff, won't you give out stuff?
My connection holds. It's you can go to facebook.com/theparanormalview, all one word, and you'll see all sorts of cool articles and stuff throughout the week. Our official website is theparanormalview.com, and you can click on archived podcasts of our shows and such like that there. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RealBadger, RealBadger. And like I say, if you're in Hollywood area, Southern California, go to WeMakeMovies.org, look under their events for Writers Workshop for this coming Wednesday, the 12th. And come not only see one of my scripts read, but my reading another person's, being a reader for another person's script. So there you go.
Right. Barbara?
Hi, you can find us all on theparanormalview.com. Links are there.
There you are. And so now you know how to get a hold of us. And we appreciate everybody for taking time to be with us, listening here tonight. And until next week, this is Henry Foister.
Jeffrey Gould.
We'll see you next week at the same time, everybody.